Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Welcome to Fantasy Feud, a pitcherless baseball podcast where we're tackling the most relevant debates in fantasy baseball each week. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Shelley Verstrate, to talk through both sides of the hottest fantasy baseball debates right now with some of the greatest minds in the industry. It was a big week of injury news, and the hits just kept coming Sunday night. I think I updated my Fab waterfall like five different times, and it still wasn't enough. How about you, Shelley? Did you make it through Fab on Sunday okay?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. I was out of town. I went up to Washington, D.C. to go see a concert. So I was in a rum bar doing Fab, and then all of this news came in, and I'm just like, you know what? I'm not going to be able to figure this out on my phone. So I just like was, I'm just going to enjoy my little cocktail and then go to the concert and not worry about it because I couldn't do anything about it. So, but it was a great weekend outside of me freaking out for a few minutes, seeing all the injuries come through.
You know, sometimes that is the way to do it, though, because honestly, life happens. And two Sundays ago, I was watching the Red Sox White Sox game at White Sox Park, whatever they call it now. And I was just like, I could be stressed out about Fab right now, or I could just let one weekend kind of go. And hopefully it doesn't cost me any leagues or the season or anything like that. But I've been pretty diligent up to that point, and it really just didn't feel like I should try to run home and miss an extra innings real life baseball game with one of my best friends so that I could, you know, get my last updates from the Fab that I had done earlier in there. So I was just like, let it go. Yeah,
exactly.
Who'd you see? What concert?
I went to this like really small venue that only held like 250 people, and there wasn't even that many people, but there's this singer, Morgan St. Jane, amazing. She's a little bit of like a feminist kind of person. So it's more of like pro women and rah, rah and empowerment. So it was really good. Very intimate. I was like front row. So yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I'm going to check out Morgan St. Jane for sure. I am also going to check out some work from our guest this week. We are really excited to welcome Joe Orrico to the show. You know Joe from his work at Fantasy Pros. And of course, as the host of 90 Feet From Home podcast, I believe I met Joe for the first time at First Pitch Arizona, which is a shameless plug. If you have not gone to First Pitch Arizona, what are you even waiting for? Come hang out with me and Shelley and Joe in Arizona this fall. Joe, welcome to Fantasy Feud. How's it going for you?
It's going great. I really appreciate you guys extending the invite. And yeah, First Pitch Arizona, there's nothing that, well, unless there's something crazy going on in my life, I'm going to try and make it there every single year because I've met so many great people. And it's just a really fantastic opportunity to just kind of unwind at the end of the season, hear a lot of baseball podcasts and panels, and just everything is so fantastic about it. So looking forward to that. Really looking forward to the show, though. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're so glad you're here, and 10-10 recommend on First Pitch Arizona. It's from like 7 o'clock in the morning until 1 o'clock in the morning. It's fantasy baseball and real baseball all of the time. It's great. I believe they just released the dates and some of the early bird stuff. So head on over to Baseball HQ, make sure you get signed up and block those dates on your calendar now. Maybe we'll do some debates at First Pitch Arizona. Who knows? I'll have to talk to the powers that be about that. Put a pin on that one for later. Speaking of, this is a debate podcast. So if you're new here, the rules of the roads are as follows. Each debater will get 3 minutes to make their case. There will be a question and answer either from the moderator or between the debaters after that for a couple of minutes. And then assuming we have not come to consensus, which every now and again on the show we do, because debate is one of those great tools where you can kind of hash things out. And sometimes you disagree and sometimes you come together. If there is not consensus at that point, we will have a 1 minute rebuttal from each debater. And that's it. We're leaving the conversations where they end at the end of that rebuttal and moving on to the next one. So we're just going to jump right into it with the biggest news from the week. And the last bit of news that I was tweaking my fab on as everything was about to run. How do you replace a player like Mookie Betts? And I mean, the real life answer is probably that you can't. He's a first rounder and a five tool player for a reason. Frankly, this year, he's done everything, including adding shortstop to his resume. But if he's on your team and been anchoring it for the past few weeks, you have to figure out a way to move forward for the next 6 to 8 weeks. So we're going to kick off today's show with what is the best way to replace Mookie Betts. And as our guest, Joe, you get to go first.
Like you said, there's no, you can't replace Mookie Betts. The production, the eligibility, everything is just incredible. Now, he's actually kind of been cold for a little while now, but any given night, Mookie can give you 2 home runs, 7 RBI in that lineup. Like, he is truly irreplaceable. But I think there are still a lot of options, especially in more shallow formats. I focus on like 10, 12 team leagues a lot of the time. If you're just running through Yahoo roster rates, you're seeing guys, especially like Mason Winn really stands out to me. I think Mookie's in a lot of shortstop, second base slots at this point. Again, it kind of really depends. You could have him anywhere, which is part of why he's so valuable. But I think if you're looking to replace him and just try and get as well-rounded of a line as you can get, I think Mason Winn solidified in that leadoff spot in St. Louis. You're getting batting average off the waiver wire, which is nearly impossible to find to go along with steals. The power's not really great, but you're getting a lot of production out of him. He's kind of the main one that I'm looking at there as a replacement. If you're trying to fill second base, you got guys like Davis Schneider, David Hamilton, who we're kind of just holding our breath on right now. Nick Gonzalez, Willie Castro is kind of like a Swiss Army knife as well. So there are options in shallow leagues, but the real answer is you're never going to replace them. You're just going to try and mitigate that damage as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, mitigating the damage is maybe the best that you can hope for. And I'll have some questions about that in a second. But Shelley, for you, if you have Mookie anywhere, how are you going to go about replacing Mookie Betts?
I could do the joke answer and be like, just pick up Alex Verdugo and Connor Wong. I mean, that's what the Red Sox did. But in all seriousness, like you said, there's no replacing him. So basically, you're going to have to churn and burn every single week unless you find that guy. Maybe it is Mason Winn. Maybe it's someone else. But in all likelihood, you're just going to have to, it's going to be instead of the closer carousel, it's the Mookie Betts carousel. You're going to have to go every week. How is this player doing that I picked up for this particular position? Is there someone else on the waiver wire? Is there someone else in the minors? Like, if you're in a league that you can pick up minor leaguers or something, do like a speculative type of pickup and move other players around. But at this point, it really, really stinks. And you're just going to have to, it's going to be a weekly churn and burn thing, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I like that. So I like that both of you have kind of staked out some different positions here. You've got like the singular players who maybe can do the best at approximating some of what Mookie is giving you. It's great call out on the batting average front for Mason Winn. Joe, what I think my question for you is, how much do you let where you are in the standings dictate what you're chasing on the waiver wire as you go to find a replacement for a guy like Mookie Betts, right? Because you're obviously not going to get like the guy who hits above 300 and is going to go 30-30 and da-da-da-da-da. But if you need power, like you said, Davis Schneider is a good option there. He can give you some power, right? If you need speed, Mason Winn might be a better option for you. How are you prioritizing those categories that you're looking for as you wade through some of these options?
It really is so team dependent. If you are like a lot of my teams at this point, Sarah, we're in Tout Wars together. If you look at the bottom of the home run and RBI categories, you're going to see my name there because that's kind of just the story of the season. I feel like a lot of people are lacking in the power stats. So you might want to look for like a Davis Schneider type off the waiver wire for sure. I mean, there will be people who are lacking all over the place. And that's why I said it's more dependent on your own team needs. But I feel like most of us are kind of in a bit of a power deficit. I also think I didn't mention before, but Jorge Soler is kind of an interesting one for me as the weather gets warmer in San Francisco. He's been kind of heating up recently. I know the barrel rate and hard hitter down this season. I just feel like that will kind of correct itself. We know who he is. There's nothing to suggest otherwise. So if you're looking for power, there are options. That is kind of the nice thing about shallow leagues. You have these options. If you're playing in 15-team NFBC leagues and you lost Mookie Betts, there's nothing you can really do. But for most of us in 12-teamers, 10-teamers, there are options for you there.
It's a really great point about your league size being a difference maker there, and great call on Jorge Soler. I mean, I have never seen anyone look more uncomfortable than Jorge Soler did in the playoffs when he had to play in the cold. He just looked like he wanted to just crawl into his shirt and his hat and just like curl up somewhere because he was clearly miserable. I think he's one of those players that the warm weather definitely makes him a better player. Speaking of, it is warm weather at Wrigley this week, and the wind was blowing out last time I looked. So if you're doing any daily fantasy stuff, Jorge Soler might be a guy to spec on. Shelly, you're talking more the churn and burn route, and I guess my question for you is more of a process one. What metrics and what stats are you using to try to figure out who's the hot guy this week that you're going to slide into that spot, right? Because one of the things that I find to be a challenge at this time of year is how much I want to trust those 14-day stats versus those 30-day stats, especially if you're streaming a spot. I mean, you really don't care that much what the guy did in April. You care that he's hot right now. So how are you looking at that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of feel for me. It's for like how I actually feel about the player. Like if it's kind of a what I consider like a bum type player and he has like a good 7 days, I'm like, well, I don't really believe that. But if it's someone that I'm like, well, I believe in what he's doing more. So it's again, it's a feel. But also like look at matchups for the week. I mean, if you have a daily news league, this is a totally different conversation. But if you have like a weekly league, check out, you know, are they facing left-handers a lot? Or, you know, is it a platoon situation? It's like so many different things that you can think of to look at. But for me, it's definitely like just matchups. Because again, 14-day stats are incredibly noisy. But it's more of trust the gut on how you feel the player should perform going forward. And then also, you know, if you can sneak, you know, facing Oakland pitchers. Yeah, go ahead and pick up that guy. You know, he could, you know, drive in some runs.
Heading to Colorado, right? Like anything you can do to get one of those guys who's going to have something to boost those numbers, because like we all agree, you're not going to replace Mookie Betts, but you got to try to approximate that production somehow. I like both of these strategies a lot. I'm going to give each of you a minute rebuttal to sort of wade through what your final say is here. Although I think we might all be a little bit in agreement that do the very best you can. And depending on your league settings, it might be a different option for you. Joe, you get a minute.
Yeah, really just weigh your categories. Know that Mookie is probably not going to come back until, it's tricky to say, but we're probably looking at about 2 months. And I do think that there are merits for both strategies, really looking at the hot players of the week, the best pitching matchups, the Coors Field, Great American Ballpark type of situations that can work. But there are some pretty nice players who have kind of been underappreciated in those shallow leagues who now are going to be given a bit more of a chance to see their roster rates rise. And there is value. So don't feel like all hope is lost. If you did lose Mookie, it's going to be tough, but you can kind of replace that to some extent.
Yes, you absolutely can. And this is the time of year where people start giving up on their teams. They're like, I just lost Mookie Betts, I'm out. Or I just lost Ronald Acuna Jr. in that. Like, this is a time where you can make moves if you're willing to put in some of that work. Shelly, 1 minute to you. And before I turn the clock over, I'm just going to say one guy who might be on that churn and burn list that I added in a couple of leagues where I needed to replace Mookie Betts. Emmanuel Valdez is super hot right now. He's going to play every single day. Like, that's one of those guys, even in some of your deeper leagues, who might be a solution for you. You have a minute.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great call out. Valdez has been really, 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 really good here recently. But yeah, it's going to be a churn and burn. It's not going to be fun. There are going to be some weeks where you have 2 to 3 players to look at. And then there are some weeks where you're just like, there's no one alive on the waiver wire, it seems like. So it's just, you just got to churn and burn until you find that guy. Maybe it will be Mason Wynn, and you could just hitch your wagon to him and just ride off into the sunset and win your league. But in all likelihood, it's going to be a carousel there.
Good stuff. I totally agree with that. I'm actually going to jump down to what we have listed on our rundown that nobody else can see as debate number 4, because one of the things that I think is relevant here, and I'm going to turn the moderating duties for this debate over to Shelly in just a second, but one of the things that I think is relevant to this Mookie Betts discussion is that trades are going to create opportunities for players, and it's going to introduce a whole new list of guys when prospects get called up to take over some of those spots where guys get traded and there's not a shortstop in that role every day on some worse teams. And so, Shelley, I'm going to turn this one over to you, but don't forget the trades are just around the corner and you might get some Mookie Betts options there.
Yeah, it's actually pretty crazy. I think the trading deadline's like 5 or 6 weeks away, something like that, which is crazy to think about, because that's kind of it for my mind. That's like the last big thing that happens in baseball before we buckle down for the playoffs. Anyway, so trade season is it's right around the corner, and let's check in on some teams and see, you know, where some opportunities could be or not for players to get a fresh start. With Joe here, we're going to start with the Blue Jays. Sorry, Joe, it's been a not so fun season. I mean, I'm on Twitter too much, and just I really feel for the Blue Jays fans. But should the Blue Jays sell at the trading deadline? And if so, is there any player that you would be interested in if they got a fresh start?
Boy, if this wasn't a pitcherless production, I would be throwing some colorful words out here to describe the Blue Jays. I am so lost with this team. They let their fans down in the offseason after we missed Ohtani, and then we filled that void with Justin Turner and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. It was really just insulting. And this is the product, right? We don't have any supports around the guys who are the main targets, Vlad and Bo. And these are now guys we're discussing trading at 24 and 25 because of how inept the team looks. But I do think that would be a bad decision in the long run. This kind of talent really doesn't come around all that often. I know that Vlad is polarizing. We don't know exactly what he can be, but even if he is not that 2021 version of himself, and maybe he's closer to 2022 and he's 30 homers, 280 batting average, 100 RBI. He's won a gold glove at first base already, even though those are kind of whatever, but that's not somebody I really want to give up on. Bo Bichette led the league in hits for two consecutive years. He would have done it last year again if he didn't get hurt. So I really feel like the best move here is to just fire the inept people who have been running the team into the ground for the last couple of years. I think, I don't want to name them, but you guys know who runs the team. These guys probably, you know, need to go at this point. If we give up on these players, it's a start of a rebuild after we just rebuilt a few years ago and got exactly zero playoff wins out of it. So I think it's a little too soon to pull the plug, as disappointing as the year has been.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I don't know. I just expected a whole lot. I'm sure I'm talking to a Blue Jays fan here, so you're probably like, yeah, I know. But it's just like really disappointing to see like this core just not be able to get over the hump. Sarah, what about you? What do you think?
I hate having to make this case against Joe, because actually the Blue Jays have been one of my AL teams. So full disclosure for anyone who's new to the show, I am a Cubs fan first and foremost. I am a Red Sox fan second, but both the Cubs and Red Sox have decided they want to be disappointments these days. And so they've gone the route of the Rays, and they don't pay money for players anymore. And then it is disappointing. And we're all just supposed to like hope and pray that they catch lightning in the bottle as a team that's supposed to win 81 games and maybe make the playoffs. So I've had to adopt other teams in the postseason recently. And the Blue Jays are one of those teams. The Phillies are the other team. That adoption is working out a little bit better right now. The problem for the Blue Jays, as far as I can tell, is that they do not play in one of the central divisions. If they played in the AL Central, this team would be in competition every single year. They would definitely be looking at a wild card spot, but they don't. They play in the AL East, and the Yankees are not messing around. The Orioles are certainly not messing around, and the Red Sox have shown signs of life recently, which I think those are overrated. Like, the Red Sox are going to come back to earth, people, so don't get too excited. But it's a very difficult division to get to the playoffs from in one of those top two spots. And if you don't get there in one of those top two spots, now you're looking at like being the third wild card and praying, which is why Joe was talking about the Blue Jays not having a playoff win with this core. I'm not sure it's getting any better. When I look at what's going on with Bo Bichette and what's going on with Vladito, and honestly, like, I just looked at Vlad yesterday because somebody had tweeted out a possible trade where the Cubs gave up Cade Horton, Nazir Mule, and like somebody else I am blanking on for 1 year of Vlad. They do need a first baseman. That's not the way to go about doing it. They'd be much better just putting Cody Bellinger at first base and seeing what they have in Pete Crow Armstrong in center. And I don't think they're going to give up Cade Horton for that. But Vlad's been better than you think he has. The problem is he's been worse in Toronto than he was when he was playing in Dunedin. And so this is a little bit tricky because Vlad is actually better in Toronto than he is at other parks. He's just not the Vladito that we saw when he was playing his games in like Buffalo and Dunedin. And so I do think that the Blue Jays are in a position where they're going to wind up selling. And I am curious what would happen if you got Vlad in a true hitter's park, like a place like Great American Ballpark or a place like Fenway, both of whom are teams that could use first baseman for the record. I'm sorry. Joe looks pained right now. And I feel bad. At the same time, I absolutely agree with Joe. It shouldn't have come to this. The Blue Jays should have been able to put together a winning team with this core. And it just sucks that the AL East is that much harder than a handful of other divisions where I think the Blue Jays would have won the division outright years ago.
Yeah, definitely. Joe, I have a question for you. The Blue Jays farm system, it's not particularly great, right? Like there are some interesting players as with any farm system. Yeah. But because there doesn't seem like to be like that level of another core, would you like to build another core and go for it again in like 3 years? Or are you just like, shut up, Shelly. I don't want to kick the can down three more years. So would you, I mean, even if they do sell, do you think that, I mean, we've already discussed it. You don't think it's a good idea, but the idea of replenishing your farm system, what is your thoughts about that?
They need to do it. The system is pretty rough. I mean, they have Tiedemann outside of Tiedemann, and even Tiedemann, there's a lot of injury problems, and there's a couple of concerns outside of just the injury too. And then on the hitting side, it's Aroldis Martinez, who actually just got called up today. And then like there's just not a lot going on there. Like I'm not a huge prospect person. That's why I'm doing a show later today with Eric Cross, because I need to kind of pick the brains of people who know a lot better than I do on minor league systems. But yeah, they need to restore. I just don't know if it should come at the cost of Vladdy and Bo, because you're not getting probably full value. Maybe from Vlad, you're getting close to it because he's turned around. But Bo, if you're trading Bo, it's 75 cents on the dollar maybe. And then you're getting a couple of other guys who are not going to be sure things. You got to wait a few more years. I don't really trust the current front office and the current development system to even turn these guys into that many viable players, because how many hits does the Blue Jays farm system really have, especially on the pitching side? Our whole rotation is acquired from different places. Vladdy and Bo are the only examples of homegrown talent, really. There's not a lot of faith I can put in the system, in the process right now. It just kind of goes back to my first point that I think they just need a clean house. I think this is an organizational problem more so than a player problem.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. The only counterpoint that I kind of have is, at least with what the Nationals have done this year, because they used to be thought of to be a really bad development system, but they've churned out some decent players, and I think they're around like 500. Yeah. This year, so things can turn around without major switching. Sarah, I know that you're not really a prospect person either, but what? Let's just give each prospect in each system like a number one prospect or number 10. We don't have to talk about names here. Would you be willing to give up more of your prospects, or would you be willing to give up like a young major leaguer? I know this is like totally not a debate anymore, but I'm just curious about your thoughts.
No, it's a really interesting question. I think about prospects a lot because I think that, so I have the saying that I use on my Cubs podcast all the time, that prospects aren't promises. One of the things I was just doing actually for a piece I'm working on about Javier Assad is going back and looking at some of the old Cubs top prospects lists, because it's really interesting that like Javier Assad is on none of them. Not like even a footnote, not an afterthought, nothing. He's not on them, right? This is a guy who's carrying a sub-3 ERA and has done it for two seasons now. And he is not on a single prospect list anywhere. You know who is on those prospect lists? A guy named Braylon Marquez, who is like not even in the league anymore. Or a guy like Brennan Davis, who is actually doing pretty well in AAA these days, but has never played a major league game. Like 2 years ago, Brennan Davis was a guy we thought was going to get called up eminently. And the reason I bring all of this up is because when you're talking about these types of trades, it's very easy to lock in on like those trade valuator things where it's like, one Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is worth three blah, 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 blahs. And you just like trade the names and then you get the values together and people spit these things out on Twitter and it kind of drives me nuts. I think their prospects come in a few different varieties. I'm going to loosely use how Fangraphs talks about their valuation system here, but truly you could apply this to anything. There are the guys who are supposed to be an all-star someday. Like the can't miss, they're going to show up and they're going to be great. This was sort of like the Noel V. Marte tier last year, right? Then there are the guys who like could be a major league regular. And that is a huge range, right? Like that's the range that say an Ian Happ was in for a long time, or the range an Alex Verdugo, who we mentioned earlier, was in for a long time, right? And then there's the guys who like they could contribute to an MLB team, we think. Right. And this is sort of like the Nelson Velasquez range. Now, I'm much higher on Nelson Velasquez than a lot of other people, which is why I'm constantly out there lighting Jed Hoyer on fire for trading Nelson Velasquez for Jose Kwas, who they just DFA'd. But the reason I bring this up is you can have a really good farm system and have seven or eight guys who might be a major league player someday, but zero stars. And you can have a poor farm system with one star and like not a lot of depth. Right. And so I just think that the way we talk about prospects and the way we talk about these returns, particularly at this time of year, is a little bit bonkers. And if you're going to trade a guy like Vladito, who is still he's putting up a WRC plus of 127 in a year that everybody considers down, you better get a haul and it better replenish your entire farm. You better get the type of haul the Nationals got. You better not get the type of haul the Red Sox got for Mookie Betts.
Well said. So I guess we'll go to rebuttals because I think we kind of got off topic and that was totally my fault. But all right, Joe, rebuttal.
Again, I think I said it already, but it just doesn't make sense to start over already. There are small moves that they can make that would maybe replenish the system without having to deal these guys who I still consider to be massive, massive assets. If we're thinking about it from a dynasty point of view, I think they're both still easily top 50 assets. Again, I'm not the biggest prospect person, but I think that's like even selling them short a little bit. And from the real life point of view, I think it's very hard to find that cornerstone shortstop and the first baseman who can put up the production like Vladdy does with decent enough defense and even maybe some third base versatility. I don't know that you should be giving up on these guys still. I would need to see, like Sarah said, I would need to see a Gore, Abrams, Wood, Hassel type of package like Washington got to even really want to consider it. Some of the things I saw getting shown around, I would not be at all happy as a return for Vlad. It would need to be a king's ransom for me, but I'm still pretty much on the hold side, even if it is. It would need to blow me away.
All right, Sarah, what you got?
I almost talked myself out of my own side here. I'll try to do my rebuttal, but I do want to give a nod to Joe because he did convince me of one thing. If you don't trust your front office, you don't want them trading your best players. Like, trust me, I am in the aftermath of Jed Hoyer trading the Cubs' best players. And I'm like, what is this? And somebody out there is screaming at their phone right now that they're listening to. They're like, the Cubs have a top five farm system, blah, 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 blah. Yes, they do. And the biggest star in that system is Pete Crow Armstrong, who has come up like three times now and has a WRC plus of 47. The defense is great. We're all not sure he can hit. And the Cubs need a guy who can hit right now. So before you wish for the Cubs farm system, like take a look at that. Again, prospects aren't promises and those gradations matter a lot, right? Everyday great defensive center fielder does not help you when you need offense. Anyway, if you don't trust the front office to make that trade, then you probably would rather that they build around it because frankly, they can do less damage there. I just don't see a path for the Blue Jays to make the playoffs this year. And given what I think is going to happen in the offseason with the Yankees and how young and deep the Orioles are, I'm not sure I see a path for the Blue Jays to make it in 2 years either, which is sort of why don't go the route of the Cubs and wait until you've got 2 months of these guys and you're just trading them for spare parts and hope. Get a king's ransom now.
Spare parts and hope. That sounds like a really like a band name or something.
It's It's Jed Hoyer's garage band named Spare Parts and Hope. It's what they're doing at Wrigley Field these days over on the north side of Chicago. I'm not bitter or anything. We are well overdue for a quick break for our sponsors. We're going to take that now, but come back on the flip side. We have some really great debates for you about how you should, whether you should sell on some guys who are having a great start to their season or not. And of course, our Love It and Leave It. First, a quick break.
Fuel your team with Total Coffee from Staples Business Advantage. Our comprehensive program offers no upfront cost brewers, installation, maintenance, and supplies. Plus, our incredible selection of coffee and beverages, including our new Pick Me Up Provisions brand. We handle everything from finding the best brewer to providing ongoing service, all at no cost with your minimum monthly spend on break room products. Visit staplesadvantage.com/totalcoffee to get started.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Smells like pine. She said, get out the chat room and clean my Glad stretch. Feeling pine so fresh.
The Glad Girl Group coming at you with a throwback jam. That was Glad Force Flex Drawstring Trash Bags featuring Pine Sol Original Scent. And that's better than all good. It's all Glad.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
All right, we're back. There are some pitchers who have absolutely wowed already this season. And one of them is a guy that we have talked about a lot on this show because I took him in the 17th round of GLARF. That is Paul Skeens. However, these guys are going to have innings limits. They're not guys who are definitely going to pitch through the entire season. So the question is, how long do you hold on to a Jared Jones or a Paul Skeens or a Garrett Crochet, one of these guys who could turn into a pumpkin at any given point in time? Do you try to flip them for another valuable player while they still have that value, or do you just write it out and take all of that bounty for yourself? And at some point it's going to turn in to a pumpkin. And Shelley, I will let you kick us off to start this debate.
Yeah. For me, who at least in Tout Wars, just lost Yamamoto, and that was easily their best pitcher. Maybe the next one is Tristan McKenzie. So I'm having a rough go when it comes to pitching. It's definitely hold. I mean, Garrett Crochet has the second most strikeouts in the league, right behind Tyler Glasnow. Yeah, he's not going to finish second because, yes, we do think that he's going to hit an innings limit just based on his professional career. And honestly, his part of his college career, because he was a reliever back in Tennessee, I think with the University of Tennessee. Anyway, hold these guys. They are precious little gems that will give you Ks. Might not give you wins, but they will give you precious Ks and great ratios. And you cannot, I mean, I don't know, unless you like, again, maybe you lost Mookie Betts and you can get an outfielder. Maybe you need more hitting help. Sure, do that. But for me, I'm holding these guys so, so, so tightly.
Yeah, it really does depend on your category needs. If you need pitching, it can be really hard to find. But Joe, you have a different take here. What are you doing with guys like Paul Skeens or Garrett Crochet who still have value right now, but may not in August?
It's a little bit format dependent for me. I'm going to be more inclined to try and make a deal in a head-to-head sense where those last few weeks of the season are so, so important. And I do think once we're talking the last 3 weeks of the season, especially once Garrett Crochet, especially for Crochet, the White Sox would be crazy to have him throwing 6-7 innings at the end of September. Considering he's already at 82 innings, Last year he threw 12 or something. Like, it was just like, there's such a massive increase, and we do see it happen sometimes. We saw it with Jesus Luzardo, we saw it with Alek Manoah. Sometimes guys can have these 100 plus inning increases, but I think we are going to see some restrictions to the point where they're not really going to be helping you that much if you do play head to head. And I think that's generally a pretty popular format. That's also something we may touch on later. But I think that head to head managers would be kind of wise to sell high, especially because the value is just so incredibly high. Luis Gil, Crochet, Paul Skeens. I think you can trade these guys right now in the average league for like a top 50 or so player a lot of the time. And I think especially if you are getting a bat in return in a year where, you know, offense is terrible, it's very hard to find. If you're flipping Paul Skeens for a top 50 player, I think you should be doing it, or at least trying to do it. This isn't to say like you sell them regardless, but if you're getting an appealing enough offer, I would not be turning it down, especially because there's been a lot of really solid pitching. I think that, you know, as the weather gets warmer, and we're seeing it now, it's like 90 degrees in Toronto today, you're going to start to see that more and more offense getting better. But I do think that pitching, you can find it, especially in shallow leagues. There's a lot of really good pitchers on 12 team waiver wires. And I think if you're able to sell really high on these guys who have done incredibly well and maybe to some degree overperformed, I would be getting out from under them if the offer is sweet enough.
Yeah, Joe, I'm going to start there where you just ended with my first question, because honestly, I think this is the whole trick for trades, right? Like, what is the offer? What are you willing? What is the return that you're willing to accept? So if you have a guy, let's use Paul Skeens here as an example, because I think it's a little bit more interesting of a case than Garrett Crochet, who I think he's already pitched more innings than he's ever pitched in a season. So you're already playing with like house money on Garrett Crochet, and it wouldn't be a surprise if he got shut down at any point in time. But I think all of us agree that the Pirates are still in it. They have every incentive to keep Paul Skeens going as long as they possibly can, obviously not trying to jeopardize the entire future. If what is the offer that you would need to get for a Paul Skeens right now that would make you feel comfortable trading him?
I'm just taking a look here. I would probably have to be at the very least somebody who I view as a top 100 type of player going forward. I would take Pete Alonso for him pretty happily. I would take it is tricky because he is such a wonderful asset, but like if somebody's willing to trade Julio, who hasn't looked that great this season, I would take Julio. I would take Jose Altuve, pretty much any position player, because trading pitcher for pitcher is probably a little bit trickier. But if you're trading him for a position player who is top 75, top 100 going forward, any of those names I listed, I'd be pretty happy to move on from him. And I think you can probably do that in a lot of leagues. The value of Skeens, and rightfully so, is through the roof. But I really wonder what the Pirates are going to be doing, you know, the last few weeks of September, once they're likely not going to be competing for too much. And they've already shown us that they're going to be cautious with them. So I do think that would make sense.
It's interesting that you mentioned Julio Rodriguez. I hadn't considered that, but you're right. He's off to a slow start. I was actually thinking more in the neighborhood of like Corbin Carroll, but obviously like I wouldn't make that trade if I'm a Skeens person. Cause I have always believed in Paul Skeens. Like, you heard it here first, people, but two, I'm not sure I believe in Corbin Carroll. If you listened to last week's episode, you know, that's true. Shelley, here's my question for you. And I hear you on the holding part. Mm-hmm. Admittedly, a lot of these things, it's very league dependent. It's dependent on what you need and what you have. But if you have a surplus of pitching for some reason, when you're looking at, let's say you are the person who has Skeens and somebody offers you a Pete Alonso, they offer you a Julio Rodriguez, what would it take for you to, would you take those offers? Where do you come down when those are sort of the guys on the table for your Paul Skeens?
I think I would. I don't know. As I've stated on this podcast before, I hate trading. I'm not good at it because I'm always afraid to lose, and I don't like to lose, even though I do lose at fantasy baseball a lot. But I don't like to lose trades where I'm just like, I have like so much egg on my face. So, I mean, with that top tier of players, yeah, I probably would, because again, I probably need some type of outfield help because it's been really hard to find some outfield help. And then, you know, Pete Alonso has power. So I would probably do that. But that I watched him last night. We were recording on Tuesday. And I watched him against, I think it was the Reds that he was pitching against. He was just so good. And I'm like, I maybe it's not me being a good fantasy manager, but it's like, I drafted that dude. I want him on my team because he's super fun. So I'm more of just hold on tight and enjoy the ride. But I can understand why people would want to cash that chip in.
I drafted that dude, and I'm very excited about it. It's been so fun to watch. Like, when Paul Skenes Day came, it came against the Cubs, and I didn't even care. I was like, it's Paul Skenes Day, people. Like, we are here, and I get to watch. And that was a crazy game for a whole bunch of different reasons, but I digress. Let's go to rebuttals. I mean, you both made excellent cases for what you could. And these are, like, first-round, second-round values that you could theoretically turn your Paul Skenes into, and you don't know what Paul Skenes in September is going to be. But I'm curious to hear how this debate plays out. Joe, you get a minute.
There is an argument to be made that, you know, and Nick Pollock made this argument on my podcast a few weeks ago, that the asset now is worth three times what the potential asset could be later on. So take what you're getting. I'm butchering Nick's wording, but essentially what you're getting today is worth a lot more than what you potentially could get down the stretch. But I do think we have to look realistically, especially at a guy like Crochet, and there's such a risk of, even if they don't shut him down, because the White Sox are not exactly, you know, a sterling organization themselves, maybe they just let him pitch. That's really opening him up to injury potential. And I think that could be said for a lot of these different guys, whether it's going to be the inning shutdown or a potential injury if the team doesn't shut them down. There's a lot of avenues for it not to go well. And for these rookies who've been doing very well, you know, Jared Jones started off looking like a Cy Young candidate, and he has kind of come back down to earth. I wonder if we see that to some extent with Paul Skenes. Everybody's going to go through bumps, even though I think he is a generational talent. There will be some rough starts, and maybe those come later on in the season. And for those head-to-head managers, especially for Roto, I'm not so sold that you have to get out from under them, because the stats count whenever you're getting them. But in head-to-head especially, I would really look to see what the value is out there, because I think the value right now is through the roof for some of these guys.
It's a great point about how value can shift. I mean, we were just talking about Mookie Betts, who had, if you had tried to offer Mookie Betts for just about anything a week ago, you probably could have asked for the moon. And now that is not the case. Shelley, your 1 minute rebuttal.
I mean, I think it's kind of fascinating that we're, Paul Skenes aside, that Garrett Crochet is even in this conversation, because I remember when, like, the tweet came out that Chicago was going to have him as their opening day starter. And I'm like, wait, they're going to start him? What is going on? And hey, the White Sox got something right this year. But anyway, for me, I doubt someone who has Pete Alonso is going to trade him or Julio, because it just seems way too high. Maybe, I mean, every league is different, but I just want to hold on to these guys that give me plenty of strikeouts. Because in most of my leagues, I need pitching. So I would just take so much for me to be like, yeah, I'll do that. And then the other side would probably be like, no, that's way too high. What are you doing? But this is also why I don't like to play in trading leagues, because I get offers and I'm just like, I don't know. So don't play in trading leagues. That's all I'll say.
I will trade, and we've had the trading conversation on this podcast before, but I will say I get very nervous about trades. I'm like, what about this guy instead of this guy? Especially if it's got a keeper aspect or something. I'm like, oh, sure. What about this guy who second Tommy John versus he's got a shoulder issue? I don't they're both $1 players. Like, I get very nervous in a keeper format about trades. So I totally understand that rationale. This was a great debate, and it feeds right into the next debate we're going to have, which Joe is going to moderate, because one of the things about trades is they are very different depending on your format. And not all formats are created equally. So Joe, take us into our next debate.
Yeah. So this one, I suggested this one when you reached out to me, Sarah, and I think Roto versus head to head is a really interesting conversation. I personally hate head to head. And it's funny enough, I sent you this on a Sunday night, so you're wondering why this was a topic of conversation. Looking at my head to head leagues, it's been very frustrating when you have just a great week, you have a sub 3 ERA, and your opponent has a sub 2 ERA, and that doesn't do a thing for you. So it's definitely, I definitely fall more on the Roto side, where it seems to be a little more level. Sarah, I think we're kind of all in agreement here, but what are your points on the Roto side of things, or just in general on the debate?
So to be clear, I think all of us love Roto more than anything. And I'll admit why. I'm kind of a control freak. And Roto allows for much more control than head-to-head. Joe nailed it. I mean, I have two head-to-head leagues, one where that I drafted almost identically. I mean, not totally identically, but like similar draft position. And I made the same player choices throughout and whatever. In one of them, I am in first place. And in the other one, I am in last place. And it's truly just a combination of like who got hurt when and like who was I playing when and like this guy had an off day and I was going up against a different guy this week and a different guy that week and whatever. And they are the same team. They were drafted by the same person out of the same position. And I'm sure some people love that. And I do not. Part of what I love about Roto is I know I'm like, we get 30 home runs from this guy. They're coming. They may not come in May, but they're coming. Right. And so I'm about to make the case for not Roto, but I truly am a Roto girl at heart. I think we could mix Roto up a bit more. And I think that embracing the chaos is part of what the people who like head-to-head like about it. That you have this weekly matchup that is not bounded, right? Like, it may be true that Freddie Freeman is a much better first baseman than Michael Bush every single week of the year except for one. But the one week where you face the guy who has Michael Bush and Michael Bush hits five home runs in five games in a row, that's the week that Michael Bush beats Freddie Freeman. And that makes it interesting, right? It keeps it from being super predictable. I think that the downside for Roto, for the people who dislike it, is that it is a little bit formulaic. It's not perfectly so. You can still make mistakes and you can sell too early on a guy. I mean, I have a league where I'm chasing saves where I have had Ryan Stanek on that team and I cut him from that team and I wish I would have held him because I could have used the saves that he just got, right? That's a little bit less chaotic than the weekly bounded baseball season. And I think that head-to-head forces you to pay more attention to the schedule and to the sort of nuances of things we were talking about earlier, like lefty-righty matchups, is this guy going to cores, those types of things. And so I think it tests a different type of skill in fantasy baseball, but I'm a Roto girl at heart, even though I'm making the case for head-to-head.
Yeah, I think everything that we talk about in fantasy should be a little more format dependent, because last year when Trey Turner really heated up, I started talking about him in like a total dollar earned context. And there was a lot of people who told me like it didn't do a thing for me because Trey Turner being so miserable as my first round pick in head to head made it so that it didn't matter for me. I didn't make the playoffs. So even though was really great down the stretch, it might as well have happened on the waiver wire, somebody else's team for all the good it did. Shelly, I'm interested on your take here. I think you are, again, kind of in agreement with us. Roto over head-to-head for you as well?
Yeah, definitely. I am a basic fantasy baseball player. I don't like trades, and I only like to play Roto. I have played head-to-head maybe twice, and I didn't like it because of the fluctuation and kind of like how I had to put my team together. Like back when I did my head-to-head leagues, Justin Upton was a thing. And we all know what Justin Upton used to do. Up, down, up, down. It was very frustrating. It's like, he is just, you know, he's a great player in Roto, but in head-to-head, oh my goodness, he was the most frustrating player because you couldn't count on him week to week. So I like just not having to think about all that because I have so many other things on my plate other than fantasy baseball. So it's a little, I don't know, it's easier for me to just be like, I trust this guy to give me 30 home runs at the end of the year. I don't care if he hits 30 in 1 month and none for the rest of the season. I don't care. I still have that 30. So I just like it's more stable as opposed to the volatility of head-to-head. I don't enjoy that.
I think it makes sense for us who cover this professionally, semi-professionally, whatever you want to call what we do, podcasting and writing about it. We put so much time into it that we don't want so much variance that head-to-head brings. We put in 4 or 5 months of preseason prep. We want our things to turn out for us as opposed to it just being reliant on who has two starts this week or who in my championship matchup is scratched or who gets pushed back or something like that. So I think that's a huge part of it. And the Justin Upton point, you know, there's something one I can bring up that's more recent, that's closer to Sarah's heart, with Christopher Morel. There are times when Christopher Morel is like a number one player for a week, and then the next week he goes 0 for 24. It's very hard to know when those are going to come, but that's what the beauty of Roto is. You don't have to worry about that kind of thing. Sarah, any Christopher Morel ad in there?
It's funny that you bring up Christopher Morel because we're going to talk about a guy later who I think is the new Christopher Morel, my next Christopher Morel in Zidane Raphaella. And I truly, like, I have a type, y'all, and my type is volatile dudes who hit really long home runs. That's it. They're fun. They have great bat speed. They hit long home runs, and then they go 0-for-24. That's clearly my type, and I will admit it freely. Look, Christopher Morel has been one of the most unlucky players in baseball this year. I do want to give him some credit because he's a great example of a guy who in Roto he's set and forget, right? Like you're like, he's gonna come out around like 250, 260, he's gonna give me 30 home runs, he's gonna get the RBIs, whatever. Like you're not worried about the fact that for 1 month he was hitting 180 or whatever. That said, if you look under the hood at Christopher Morel this season, and I'm going to pull this up so I have the exact right stats because this is one of those things that I should know off the top of my head, but I haven't actually looked at Christopher Morel this week. And so I want to make sure that I give our listeners what they came for here with accurate Christopher Morel data. Christopher Morel has cut his strikeout rate to 22.1% this season. He has increased his walk rate to 11.4%. He has hit 13 home runs in just about a third of a season. And I'm sure some of you are very upset that his batting average at this moment in time is 196, but he's one of the fastest guys in the league, and he has a BABIP of 206. I promise you, the hits are coming. They are going to start to fall, and a lot of them are going out of the park. Everything you ever wanted from Christopher Morel in terms of plate decisions, in terms of swing decisions, in terms of is he waiting for the right pitch? He is doing those things right now. He has like taken all of the best parts of the guys who came before him, who cuts their strikeout rate 9 percentage points and keeps their power with elite bat speed when they're 24 years old. Not very many guys. Christopher Morel has done it. So I just want to say, for anyone who believes in Christopher Morel, Eric Halterman, I'm looking at you. It's here, y'all. The real deal is here. And when that luck turns and those balls start falling for hits, it's going to be a thing of beauty to behold. So the day for all of us is coming.
It sounds like you described 2023 Ronald Acuna there. Cut your strikeout rate, the power, the bat speed. It was essentially Acuna. Not that I'm saying Morel is Acuna, but there's worse players you could be comped to for sure. I'm not sure there's much of a rebuttal to be had here. I think we're all kind of in agreement, down with head-to-head, Roto for all. But I do want to say, like, play what makes you happy. Play what's fun for you and your friends. Because I got myself in trouble on Twitter about a year ago saying, like, if you're setting up your league, or it was before this season, actually, I said, if you're setting up your league, make it Roto over head-to-head. And a lot of people were like, well, I like head-to-head. And what am I supposed to say to that? Like, you're not going to play something you don't like because it's more official or more whatever. Like, play what you enjoy. That's my final kind of remark on it. I don't know if there's really much rebutting to do here. So I guess I'll throw it back to Sarah.
No, I don't think there's any rebutting to do there, but yeah, play what you like. Some people like the chaos, right? They find that to be more interesting. Some people like the certainty. I personally like the certainty. I'm okay with mixing it up a little bit here and there, but I totally understand why Christopher Morel would be an aggravating guy to have on a head-to-head team, and I have him everywhere, and I'm super happy about it. I can't wait for his luck to turn. I mentioned Zidane Raphaella, and let's just go to that debate right now, because honestly, I think this is a pretty fun one with a couple of fun players. And Joe, I'm going to pass it back to you because you are moderating our Red Sox debate here.
This one is an interesting one, and I'm glad I'm moderating it so I don't have to really choose a side here, because I do think it is very close. Between Zidane Raphaella and Jaron Duran, they've both been outstanding over the last 30 days. According to the Fangraphs player rater, 25-50 and 24-50 respectively. Rest of season, for me, I think you could toss a coin, or if you were choosing 10 leagues, I would choose 5-5 type of deal. So I'm no use here. Sarah, what is your thought here? I think you've already kind of hinted at it, but who is your choice in this debate?
So to be clear, I like both of these players. I tried to get both of them everywhere that I could. I have a lot more Raphaella than Duran, but that's mainly because some of y'all picked up on Duran over the last season. I had a ton of Jaron Duran last year because I believed in what he was doing there too. I think Raphaella is fun, and specifically, I think that we slept on him a little bit. If you think about how late he was going in drafts for a guy that has shortstop and outfield eligibility, plus a guy who has gone 20-20 at basically every stop of the minor leagues, it's wild that we slept on him so much. I actually, Shelley will remember this, and I did this with a handful of other people in the fantasy community too. In draft season, I was like, why is everybody sleeping on Rafaela? This looks like a kid who's gone 20-20 at every single level, and I don't understand. These are very brilliant fantasy people. Shelley is one of the smartest fantasy players I know. There's a reason I went to her DMs, and to a T. He swings at the wrong pitches. He swings too much swing and miss. And I was like, well, that sounds a lot like Christopher Morel. So I'm still in. And I stayed in. And I feel like we're seeing why I stayed in right now, because what you're getting from him is a power speed combo that is wicked. And because he plays for a team that desperately needs him at shortstop right now or in center field, he plays every single day and he's just doing fun and amazing things. So I admit, you're in a head-to-head league. There's some volatility here. I'm sure there's a month coming or a five-week stretch coming where he's going to look awful again. He's going to hit like 150 and he's going to strike out way too much and people are going to panic. He's 23 years old, people. I love this type of player. I like guys who are toolsy. I like guys who are fun. I like guys who have big skills that are so loud that they just scream at you on the field. And Rafaela is one of those guys. But that is no shade to Jaren Duran, who I also love.
One thing I'll say about Rafaela is he's only on 55% of rosters. I look a lot at Yahoo roster rates, and he's been going up a lot recently. But somebody who wasn't getting a lot of respect, he's nearly top 20 in the American League in both runs and RBI. He's about a top 60 or so player. I don't have the player rater pulled up in front of me, but he's been incredible, despite being pretty terrible to start the season, to the point where there were some talks, I believe you guys are both more Red Sox fans than I am, for sure. I'm not much a Red Sox fan at all, being division rivals and all, but there was some talk, I believe, about him maybe going back down to AAA. He was, I think, batting a .186 through April, batting at the bottom of the order and still doing so much for you. That's not to take anything away from Jaren Duran, though, who is in and of his own right like a top 30 player for the season. Had a bit of a slow stretch there, but he's just turned things on tremendously. Shelley, do you have a different take than Sarah on this one? I think you might.
Yeah, I definitely do. For me, this one is the same as it was in the preseason. Give me Jaren Duran. And I remember that DM, Sarah, about you, because you were asking me. I'm like, yeah, he swings way too much. He's way too aggressive. He's just going to strike out. And you were like, oh, it sounds like Christopher Morel. And I'm like, well, crap. Yeah, she's right. It sounds like Christopher Morel, and he's basically turning into him, which is great as a fan. But I like Duran because he hits leadoff and he steals bases. So there's more runs. I mean, I know that Rafaela has had a lot of runs scored so far this season, but just getting those more at bats and I do think that Duran's going to finish with like the higher batting average. So if he finishes with a higher batting average with the more at-bats, that really helps mitigate some other people who are struggling when it comes to batting average. And also, we saw this from him last year. So it's a little bit, it feels a little bit more real than Rafaela. I mean, I could be wrong. I've been definitely enjoying his defense out there. But for me, it's Duran because he just seems more real, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Top of the order versus bottom of the order as well definitely plays a factor. It's so close. They're both super valuable, and I do think if you are seeing anybody who is like not quite bought in on either one of them, my personal opinion would be buy. I put a rookie of the year bet on Rafaela recently, just because I'm not much of a gambler at all, but it just seemed like such long odds for somebody who there seems to be a kind of a pathway for him potentially there. Sarah, any thoughts on what Shelley's saying? Does it change your stance at all? Her thoughts on the matter?
I mean, it doesn't change my stance. And I want to be really clear. Like, Duran is the smarter play here. Like, there's a reason that Duran went probably 10 to 12 rounds before Rafaela in most of your drafts. But that's also partially just because of how new Rafaela is. When Rafaela debuted last year, there were not a ton of people running to the waiver wire to get him. I was like, oh, look, I like 2020 upside potential. I don't care how much he swings and misses. Like, let's just see what we've got. I will say, if you're in one of those 45% of Yahoo leagues that Joe Arrico was just talking about in terms of like where Rafaela is still available and you just lost Mookie Betts, hello, yeah. Come on down. There's your Mookie Betts replacement right there. You could do a lot worse than a guy who's going to give you $24 worth of value in, and he's got speed, He's got power. He plays every day. He's got the middle infield and outfield eligibility. I don't know what you're looking for. Like, that is your Mookie Betts replacement. Now, am I saying he's Mookie Betts? I am not. Could he become somebody with like a hint of the upside of a Jarren Duran someday? Yeah, he could. Jarren Duran's going to go earlier in drafts next season, and he should. Rafael is a guy that you can still get at the Christopher Morel bargain basement rate, and you should.
I think we might be trending to a point if Rafael keeps us up where you might not get as much of a discount as we're thinking. He's been just so good as of late. I wonder if he's able to sustain it, because over the last month, he's like inside the top 15 or 20 players. Any rebuttal from you on that one there, Shelly? I know like Sarah's kind of conceded that it's not the smart play to choose Duran over, or to choose Rafael over Duran, but any thoughts on what she had to say there? I know it is generally more Duran, but Rafael is just so exciting.
Yeah, I mean, totally more exciting. And I guess we're going to, you know, how you mentioned earlier that there was like talk about, you know, sitting him back down or having him sit on the bench. But I mean, we'll get to it in our, I guess, our next debate about defense. His defense is outstanding and it kept him on the field. And now we're seeing this level of Rafaela. So yeah, I think it's, you know, awesome. That is what he's doing. I mean, give me Durant obviously for the rest of the season, but honestly, you know, going back to like the trading stuff, which again, I do not do. So, this would be a guy that I would want to trade to get who I feel would be more secure. Cause this seems not really sustainable. So this would probably be a guy that I would look to trade as opposed to keep long-term.
And even like in a dynasty context, or is that just more for redraft?
Just redraft, yeah, not dynasty.
When you said long term, I wasn't sure if you were more drifting towards dynasty. I just wanted to clarify. I think that is a pretty good discussion on that front. Unless you guys have anything else you'd like to add, Sarah. They're both really, really exciting. I know Boston has been kind of disappointing this season, but these guys are just really fantastic. And we didn't even mention Hamilton as well, who's just also kind of in that mix of just awesome. I hope he's all right. I don't think that'll be too serious, but I will throw it back to Sarah. Apologies for some stumbling on the moderating. I'm not quite used to moderating debates here. This is my first time ever doing it, actually.
No, you did an awesome job, and thank you for the pass. Yes, all healing vibes to Hamilton, because the Red Sox actually look fun this last week after multiple weeks of them not looking very fun. So hoping they can get that all back together. We actually need to take one more quick break for our sponsors. On the flip side, Joe is going to moderate his second debate ever. We're going to leave y'all with our love it or leave it for the week. But first, a quick break.
Everyone loves a good family mystery, especially one with as many twists and turns as June's Journey. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery mobile game that puts your detective skills to the test. Embark on a journey into a gripping narrative where intrigue, secrets, and unexpected twists await at every turn. Play as June Parker and investigate beautifully detailed scenes of the 1920s, whilst uncovering the mystery of her sister's murder. Rediscover the magic of June's childhood as you roam the vast estate filled with secrets and memories waiting to be uncovered. Gather compelling evidence and decipher clues, immersing yourself in a captivating world of discovery that will keep you hooked until the very end. Compete with friends and other players to see who can solve cases the fastest or achieve the highest scores. Are you ready to jump back in time, detectives? Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Discover the secrets of the past. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
All right. We're back. Last debate of the show. And Joe, I am going to pass it to you for moderating duties.
Yeah, this one's a pretty simple question. Is defense important in fantasy baseball? Let's start with Shelly. I've been throwing it to Sarah every time, but let's get Shelly's opinion on this one first.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I, you know, talked about it a little bit in our previous debates. Defense is important, and there is just like the thing that I hear sometimes on podcasts is that defense doesn't matter because it's not a category. Yes and no. Yes, it's not a category, but it totally does mean something, because if you can pick it on the dirt, if you can go grab it in the outfield, right, you're going to play just like Rafaela. But if you're not that great, let's just say you're a lumbering first baseman, or, you know, someone who just doesn't really have a true home, kind of like that's how Michael Busch never really debuted, really. I mean, he debuted for the Dodgers, but he didn't really get playing time for the Dodgers. But he is currently getting playing time with the Cubs. That I guess that's more of a trade thing versus a position thing. But defense does matter. It keeps you on the field. And when you are on the field, you get to see more and more of the, you know, of the top tier pitching. So in theory, you should get better if you will get better, if that makes sense. So yes, defense is important. And please never, ever, ever say that on a podcast, or you will get a mean side eye from me if I'm listening to you.
I agree. Defense is really important, especially for young players. It does keep them on the field. As you get older, especially as you're a more established hitter, if you can hit and you're 30 years old and you can't play defense, then I think most of the time you'll be all right. The Teoscar Hernandezes of the world. But like, look at Anthony Volpe last season, for example. Like, he probably could have used a trip down to the minors. His struggles offensively were pretty severe, but he won the Gold Glove in the American League at shortstop. And I think that was part of the reason why the Yankees maybe stuck it out with him. And that's paying off right now. Sarah, what are your thoughts on defense in fantasy baseball? Should we pay attention to it?
So I want to just be really clear. I wholeheartedly agree with Shelley that defense keeps you on the field, and that gives you time to work out a bunch of things. And one of the things we were talking about when Derek Van Riper was on the show, that I believe we might have borrowed from Rates and Barrels, I think I heard Eno talking about this, but is this idea that AAA pitching is so much worse than major league pitching, that like just getting those reps against major league pitching is one of those things that you have to do, right? Like you cannot replicate that at AAA. This is the Matt Mervis. This is like the moral of the story of the Matt Mervis saga, right? Like he's down in AAA and he's raking, and every time he comes up to the major leagues, he's not very good, and he doesn't have a good enough glove at first base to keep him on the field. And so he goes back to AAA, and that's how you get stuck as a quad A player, a la Michael Busch, like y'all were just talking about. That said, I think that we need to complicate this issue a little bit, because there's the type of defense that keeps you on the field when you can play shortstop and center, a la Rafaela. And then there's a guy like Davis Schneider, who is not all that good defensively, but the man hits bombs, and he hits bombs for a team that is not doing a very good job of hitting bombs. And so they're just trying to find anywhere that they can keep Davis Schneider in the lineup. And whether that is a corner outfield spot, or whether that is second base, or whether that's a designated hitter spot, the Blue Jays have figured out ways to keep Davis Schneider in the lineup because they need his bat in the lineup, right? And so I think that defense can give a defense can give a boost to a guy who doesn't have that type of hit tool. But for the guys we're talking about in fantasy, sometimes when they just have the hit tool, we don't need to worry all that much about their glove, right? Because they're going to stay on the field. Another guy we were just talking about, Christopher Morel, is not a very good defensive player at this moment in time. I actually think that's because the Cubs messed up on his development a little bit, because he has all the tools to be a good defender. He just hasn't really had a chance to put them all together. That's a show for a different podcast. However, he is going to stay in the lineup because the bat is electric, right? Whether he plays third base or DHs or plays in the outfield or whatever, Christopher Morel has a spot in that lineup as long as he wants it, because the bat is that good. So I think, yes, defense matters, but mainly for the guys in the vast middle, not for the guys who are elite. And most of the guys we care about in fantasy baseball are the elite.
Yeah, that's totally fair. It helps out, but it's not necessarily essential. It can help kind of keep you on the field through some struggles, maybe, because if you are if David Schneider starts to struggle, which, my God, he better not. I hope he doesn't. And we have seen some struggles, but he could lose playing time if that does happen, because he's not a great defender. He doesn't really have, I mean, he's more of an infielder than an outfielder, but I think it's not something we need to focus on a ton, but it does help you out with some small decisions here and there. And I think it is valuable, but not something that is a huge part of the process. I don't think any of us would say that it is like a massive part of our preseason or even in-season process. Maybe it is. Shelly, does that factor in at all into how you evaluate players in the offseason?
It kind of does. Like Sierra said, we're not talking about the tippy top. We're talking about that squishy, gushy middle of players. For me, it's kind of like the thing that wins the coin flip. I don't even know if that's even that, you know, it's like a, if I have two players who I think are the same kind of like production, but one can play defense and one I'll give me the defensive guy, cause I feel that I can bank on that more. So it's more of, I don't factor it into my analysis, but it's more of, once I get these two players together, give me the guy who I think can stick on the field.
What do you think about that, Sarah?
I actually, two guys popped into my head as Shelly was talking, and I want to talk about both of them because they're kind of like flip sides of the same thing here. And I think it's just interesting and probably will help people as they make their fantasy baseball decisions. But so one guy I was super into this year because of his defense was Bryce Terang. I saw how many stolen bases he had last year. I saw how good the glove was when he played against the Cubs. I knew he was going to play more second than short, but I didn't really care about that because I figured he was an excellent shortstop. He was going to be an excellent second baseman. And this is one of those guys who was on that kind of fringe of like, oh, is he gonna be able to stick? Is he gonna make the team? Maybe Tyler Black's coming for his job. Whatever. He wasn't, for the record. I blew $120 a fab on that, and that was sad for me. But Bryce Terang is having a breakout year. He got a shot at the breakout year because of his glove, not because of his hit tool, because of his glove. Now he's doing the hit tool thing, and that's awesome if you picked up Bryce Terang. Another guy who had similar thoughts about and who was on a lot of my teams, Johan Rojas, excellent center fielder for the Phillies, sort of overperformed his hit tool, lots of stolen bases, and I am loving the stolen bases, but he's in the minors right now because when Edmundo Sosa came up to fill in for Trey Turner, the bat was just that much better, and they wanted to see if they could get him a little bit more seasoning for his bat, despite the fact that he's an excellent center fielder. So this kind of goes both ways, right? Like, defense can get you a tryout, and it can get you a shot, and then it's up to the player with what they do with that shot. It is definitely something you should consider in draft season, and as you're adding guys to your team, though, because if they don't have some skill, be it their glove or their bat, that is keeping them on the field, there is always someone else who can come up and take their job.
Absolutely. I agree with everything you said there. Shelly, do you have any rebuttal? It seems like you agree with what Sarah said.
Yeah, I totally do. I have nothing else to say. She totally nailed it.
I think that's a good discussion on the defensive side, unless there's anything else you'd like to add, Sarah. But I think we all agree it is important. It's not something to overemphasize too much. If somebody's an incredible fielder, but they hit .185, I don't think that really matters too much. But it does definitely come into the conversation here to some extent. Sarah, back to you. I'll throw it back to you here.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Joe. And you did a great job moderating your first two debates here. We hope you'll come back and join us sometime. Before we end the show the way we always end it, with our love it or leave it, one thing from fantasy baseball or real baseball this week that you're super into or over. Joe, remind all of our guests where they can find you, where they can find your work, and where they can follow you.
I'm on Twitter at JoeOrico99. It's just my name and the number 99. Nothing too crazy there. I do a lot of work at Fantasy Pros, but a lot of it is in front of the camera right now. A lot of it is producing. I do a lot of the production for the baseball and football podcast, some of the betting ones as well. And then I host my own podcast, the 90 Feet from Home Fantasy Baseball Show, taping an episode in about an hour from now, half an hour, with Eric Cross. That one will be up later tonight, and doing a ton of stuff on social media. It's just, all of it is at JoeOrico99. That's kind of the one-stop shop for all my blabbering and writing.
Amazing stuff. Joe is a great follow. If you don't follow him already, please be sure that you do. And also say hi to Eric from me and Shelly, because he's definitely on our list of people who will be coming on this show. Let's do end the show the way we always do, with our love it or leave it, one thing from baseball this week that you were super into or over. And Joe, you are a guest, so we'll start with you.
One thing that I'm really looking forward to is the return of Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer. I think in a year, And I don't know if it's 100% confirmed with Scherzer, but it sounds like he's going to pitch against the Royals this weekend. I did stick him into a lineup. It's funny. I had the Max Scherzer or John Gray decision in one league, and I'm very thankful I went with Scherzer. Even if he doesn't pitch, we'll take that. But it's really nice to see in a year where we've just lost so many top-tier pitchers, and even going back to last year with Alcantara and McClanahan, that we're going to add a couple of aces back into the pool. Not really the free agent pool. I don't think they're really available in too many cases. But it's just a breath of fresh air to see a couple of Hall of Fame pitchers returning in a year where it seems like every other day there's a new pitcher needing Tommy John. So I'm just thankful to get a couple of great aces back. That's really like the one thing that's kind of brightening up the week for me.
Yeah, return of some aces. Good stuff. Pitching has been such a disaster this year. So anytime we can add some arms to the mix and watch some guys do their thing, that's good. That's always a great sign. Shelley, what is your love it or leave it this week?
Mine is, I guess it's not in the past week, but it's this upcoming week. So I think it's on Thursday evening. The Negro League tribute game is happening at Rickwood Fields in Birmingham, Alabama. And that's like really cool because this field has been in use for decades. And they used to play like the Negro League World Series there, like Willie Mays played there, like so many Negro League greats play there. And it's just bringing awareness and more publicity to the Negro Leagues and just all of that. And then, you know, just bringing a big game to, you know, Birmingham. So that's just, I don't know. I just think it's really cool. And yeah, I might actually watch a minor league game full stop while major league games are being going on. So really cool.
Yeah, that's great stuff. I'm really looking forward to this game as well. And Rickwood Field, I believe, is the oldest ballpark in existence at the major league level still. It's older than Fenway. It's older than Wrigley. And that is hard to do, people. Wrigley and Fenway have been around for a hot minute. I have a leave it this week. And look, I am on the record. Your city connects or your city connects. If you in your city like them, that's it. That's the end. Nobody else has to like them. I think that the Boston City Connects are great. Everybody I know from Boston loves them and all runners love them. And everybody not from Boston and non-runners are like, what is this thing? And it's like, it's not for you. It's fine. However, this week, the Dodgers unveiled their second city connect because the first one was so boring that everybody was like, no. And so the Dodgers did their city connect again. And when a friend screenshot this and sent it to me, I thought he was trolling me. Like, I thought this wasn't a real jersey because it really just looks like the DirecTV logo. How do you mess up your city connect twice? And why did the Dodgers get a mulligan when no one else got a mulligan? This is some LA shenanigans, and I am not here for it. I would like the Dodgers to get off. Like, the Dodgers need to stop getting special treatment and also stop messing up city connect jerseys.
I agree. I don't like really any of the city connects. And like you said, it's kind of up to each individual city. Maybe I'm not supposed to like them, but it seems like everyone that comes out, it's like, eh, all right, you know, whatever. They're just not, even Toronto's that came out a couple weeks ago, they're growing on me, but eh, that's my general reaction to all of them.
I'm pretty sure that they're just trying to get more money from us. They made the jerseys worse and they want us to buy more of them. And I'm out on that proposition. I'm totally out. I do have a Cubs City Connect jersey that I like quite a bit. I like the Cubs City Connect. I know other people don't. Again, it's not for you. It has a Respect This Neighborhood patch on it that I think is pretty cool. And I also have a Red Sox one because I have run 14 half marathons and ran the Chicago Marathon in 2017. And there was no way I was not going to get the Boston Marathon City Connect Boston jersey. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. So I did that. All righty, Joe, thank you again so much for joining us. It was outstanding having you on the show. If you want to follow me on social, I am at @BCB_Sarah. Shelley, remind people where they can find you on social.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @ShelleyV_643.
Awesome. And don't forget to follow our guest, Joe Orrico, at @JoeOrrico99. As well, make sure that you're also following his amazing podcast, 90 Feet from Home. And we will be back next week with more of the fantasy baseball debates that are helping you make decisions in your leagues right now. Until next time.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.